Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hour two, Mike, let's go. Glad that you're hanging out. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Really good first hour of baseball conversation. We'll get back to some of that baseball a little bit later on in the show. I got some NBA things that I want to discuss and a couple of NFL things I want to discuss. This hour being brought to you by Shelton Fireworks, home of the big ones. If you have not read the special that the Tribune put together this past weekend about the Bulls and the history of the Bulls between the last championship and where we sit today, I highly recommend it. It is a great read for anyone who is a Bulls fan or just wants to understand how organizations work, or if you're a Chicago historian. I think that there's a lot to glean from it as well. The title of it is 20 Years Since Dissolution of the Dynasty, Bulls still a long way from the top. And one of the authors of the piece is Casey Johnson. Malika Andrews also provided some work on it as well. It's really good and very, very dense. And it made me want to reach out to have Casey on the show to talk with him about it. And he was nice enough to join me. And he joins me on the CDW hotline. CDW, making IT solutions work for you. Orchestration by CDW. CDW, people who get it. Casey, thanks so much for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
What's up, Lawrence? Good to be with you, man.
Same here. I want to know first, before we get into the meat, how long did it take you to put this story together?
Well, the benefit of not covering a playoff team is you got a lot of time on your hands.
So, that's true.
It was a decent amount of time, but here's the thing. Obviously, I covered it all, so I lived it once, and then it was basically just an intriguing assignment hatched by our associate managing editor of sports, Joel Knowles, to kind of just delve into what has happened since the last championship. You know, there's it's been 20 years. Is today Wednesday? I never know what day it is. Today is what day?
It's Wednesday. Yep.
Okay, yeah.
Wednesday the 13th.
Tomorrow is actually the 20-year anniversary exactly from the last title, June 14th, 1998. And so there's one of two ways you can go. You can celebrate the dynasty or you can analyze what has happened since. We try to do a little bit of both, but we spent more time analyzing what's happened since, mostly because the dynasty has been revisited a lot and obviously produced a lot of great memories that are in people's the forefront of their consciousness. So we decided to kind of analyze what has happened since. And they gave me a lot of time to work on it. The themes that are in the piece kind of started jumping out at me. To me, there were kind of three significant movements, the first one being Jerry Krause's to build around Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry. The second one being when John Paxson took over for Jerry Krause and, you know, started hitting on some draft picks, and it was the baby Bulls, the try-hard Bulls of Heinrich, Gordon, and Deng. And then, obviously, the third era would be the Derrick Rose era. And now we're – and the other reason why we kind of decided to do what we did is they're starting on their fourth rebuild. Obviously, there's momentum inside the building on Markin and Dunn and Levine. And so here we are. I mean, we're 20 years removed, and they're starting over, and we'll see where this one takes us.
Having lived through and covered these eras, which was the most interesting to kind of go back through your notes and talking to people about?
It definitely was not the Rose one, because that was wearying for anyone that followed it, covered it. The fall from grace for Derek's organization, you know, with all those successive knee injuries, that would be my least favorite. I've said this before. I put this in mailbags. I've done this with readers. By far, my favorite team to cover was that 2004-05 team. It just came out of nowhere. It started 0-9. You know, Deng, Gordon, Nocioni were all rookies. Heinrich was in his second year. Duhon was a rookie, and they just caught fire, and just it was unexpected, and it was thrilling because it was young guys who didn't know any better, and you know, they end up winning 47 games and get back to the playoffs for the first time since the dynasty ended. So that era was probably the most intriguing, just because I was really connected with that, those players and those teams, and I'd kind of forgotten how they really felt that they were close, and they really felt that Ben Wallace was that last piece. And it's easy to poo-poo that move now in retrospect and kind of laugh at it and say, but I'm telling you, at the time of that signing, it wasn't just signing Ben Wallace. It was stripping Ben Wallace from the rival Pistons. It was a big deal. It also kind of, in the Bulls' minds, broke down the stereotype that they couldn't attract a big free agent because he was a premier free agent on the market. So I'd kind of forgotten the impact of that signing and how it worked a little bit, but not really. And that was kind of enlightening for me to go back and revisit.
I enjoyed reading about the Baby Bulls era just because I was looking at it through the prism of, you know, Tyson Chandler has been a really good player. You know, he's not going to make anyone's Hall of Fame, but he's been a guy that would average with 9 and 10 throughout his career, and has shown incredible leadership skills, especially later on in his career. He didn't blow up, you know, as a player, but I think all in all, you know, Jerry Krause, the decision to at least draft that guy, you can look at and go, yes, I understand why he made that pick and wanted to kind of have him be a cornerstone of the next era of Bulls.
Well, he Jerry Krause wanted to dream big, and you know, obviously he had Elton Brand, the number one overall pick, and the co-rookie of the year was Steve Francis. And he felt like Eddie Curry was a duplicate of Elton Brand, and he felt like Eddie Curry could be better than Elton Brand, and then he felt like Elton Brand could get him Tyson Chandler. So he went for the home run. And you're right. I mean, Tyson's career is really interesting because he's won a Defensive Player of the Year award. He's won an NBA championship with the Mavericks, and he was on a Olympic team in 2012 in London. So it's very, very accomplished career, but no, not any like dominant, you know, Anthony Davis type individual seasons. Just he's really figured out how to be a great pro. He's still doing that. But he's definitely more of like an all-star role player than an all-star dominant player. It was interesting. This isn't tied to this project, but in 16, I did a 15-year anniversary piece looking back at that draft, because Curry and Chandler was 0-1. And I couldn't get a hold of Curry. I tried a lot of different places. He just wasn't up for the project. But I had a really frank and heartfelt and long interview with Tyson Chandler. And the thing that's the big takeaway, and that has stayed with me to this day, is Tyson just, you know, proclaiming and raving with great intensity of how much better a player Eddie Curry was than him. And yet here's Tyson still kicking in the league and doing the things he's doing. And Eddie's obviously fallen by the wayside. So that was really telling to me about just the individual talent that Eddie Curry had that unfortunately went to waste.
Talking with Casey Johnson, who writes for the Chicago Tribune, covered the Bulls forever. Follow him on Twitter at KCJHoop. The piece is fantastic. You should read it in the Tribune about the 20 years that the between championship and where we are now with the Bulls. Casey, was there a player that you were like, yeah, this guy's going to be great for the Bulls, and it didn't turn out as well as you expected it to?
Just what I should have saved that other anecdote. It was Eddie. I mean, I really thought Eddie, just with his athletic ability, there was that obviously well-documented great story about how he could do a a backflip, you know, just standing there and just all of a sudden drop a backflip on you because he had a gymnast background, and just his hands. I mean, they were so they caught it. They caught everything. They were so soft around the rim. His shooting touch. He led the NBA in field goal percentage 1 year. I really thought he was going to be not Shaq level, but in that neighborhood. And you saw some potential. You saw some moments. You saw times where he did dominate. I remember also from that Tyson interview that Tyson used to say he used to try to purposely get Eddie mad. Like he would, you know, say hurtful things to him to try to anger him, because when Eddie was angry or motivated, he would just play lights out. But it's just not his demeanor. And Tyson also said that, you know, like you gotta honor somebody who's true to himself. I mean, Eddie was one of the most nicest, docile personalities I've ever been around. He just didn't really have that in him. But this isn't my opinion. I mean, I spent a lot of time with Jerry Krause in the later sunset years of his life before he passed, and you know, he used to say, like, just one of his great regrets is just the talent that Eddie Curry wasted. He really felt like Eddie never really reached his full potential.
That's sad. I mean, it really is. Cause, I mean, I always think that it's difficult for people from here to play here.
Yeah.
We saw a lot of that at the end of Derrick Rose's career, because people felt like they had a connection with him, and probably a connection that they didn't have and that he didn't necessarily have with the fan base. And it can turn ugly if things don't go well. That era of Rose with the Bulls, was there any moment where you felt like they might be able to overcome what LeBron was building in the Eastern Conference?
Well, I mean, before the ACL tear, you felt like that rivalry was going to be there all day long. I mean, that was the first of what you thought was going to be multiple head-to-head battles in the playoffs. You know, they made it there, obviously, in 11 when Derek had just assembled the youngest MVP season in league history, and you just felt like it was limitless. You felt like it was going to be around for a long time. And if you remember, I mean, LeBron welcomed that challenge because he was the one guarding Derek down the stretch of those games and shutting him down in the fourth quarter of the 11 conference finals. And then a year later, the Bulls lead the league in that shortened lockout season and regular season victories, and you think it's going to happen again. You think they're going to get to the conference finals again. And the Heat were there waiting for them, but the Bulls didn't make it, obviously, because of that awful April 28th, 2012 day where Derek tears the knee, and it just never was the same after that.
Who's the most interesting of the personalities that you've had to deal with through this 20-year stretch?
Who's the most interesting personality?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's easy. Joakim Noah for me. I mean, there are a lot of great personalities in that time. And I mean, I covered Ron Artest as a rookie. What can you say about that? I mean, that's gold right there.
Some of the locker room stories from Ron Artest back then are amazing.
Yeah. Roman Modrowski from the Sun Times way back when, this is pre-internet, everything, late broadcast right away. We'll still tell to the day we die laughing all the time. Ron had like six steals in a game, and we went in to interview him about how great a defender he was. And he launched into a soliloquy about how he was a great shoplifter as a kid, and that's how he was so good at getting steals. And he started sharing with us his shoplifting techniques. And Roman and I are looking at each other on deadline like, what the hell is going on here? But I digress from Joakim. His combination of intelligence, worldliness, curiosity, genuineness, very curious about other people, and then ultimately just his sense of humor. He's very self-deprecating and very playful. As a beat writer, it's a golden mix that you never tired of, and I will always appreciate, as you know, wherever my career goes from here.
One of the common denominators of this 20-year stretch is 15 years of John Paxson being in charge. And I wonder, with some of the ways, and you chronicle this in the piece, of coaches getting fired by the Bulls and in strange occurrences or on holidays and all sorts of stuff, what do you think Pax has learned about that level of leadership during his tenure?
Yeah, it's a good question, Lawrence. The thing about it is, if you look at the hires, they're all good hires, except you could argue the Vinny hire, and that was actually probably more of an ownership hire. He wowed ownership in his final interview. Dwayne Casey was a finalist at that time, too. They obviously had the highly publicized flirtations with Mike D'Antoni, who went to the Knicks, and Doug Collins, who Jerry Reinsdorf vetoed as the hire. I mean, so... But, you know, Skiles, home run hire at the time. Thibodeau, home run hire at the time. You know, Hoiberg, probably not to the level that they have wanted through the first 3 years, but at the time, exactly what they wanted, and that's actually probably viewed a little bit more as a Gar Forman hire anyway. But to answer your question, I think it's something that John has acknowledged that he's not been great at. I mean, in terms of how things have ended with coaches, he's hard on coaches. It's interesting because if you remember way back when Michael took over the Wizards, he wanted to hire John Paxson as his head coach, and he ended up hiring Leonard Hamilton. But John didn't want any part of it. He said he just wouldn't be able to handle the day-to-day pressures of coaching. And it's interesting that now, you know, that's manifested itself in him being hard on coaches. Obviously, he had the incident with Vinny at the end of his tenure. I mean, you probably have to ask John that question, but the hires themselves, I think, have been very good. The way they've ended, not so good. You know, but no firing, I think, is going to end great. He had to fire his respected teammate, Bill Carre, as one of the first things he did, who was a Jerry Krause hire. And, you know, that probably went about as well as you can. But, you know, it's certainly a check mark in terms of how they've ended on his tenure. But the hires themselves, I think you could argue that they've all been pretty good ones.
I appreciate you indulging me in this conversation because it was just so layered and dense, the piece that you put together. Now let me take you to the present and the future. When you're looking at the Bulls and where they're drafting, what do you think they need, and which player in this draft, where the Bulls are going to be drafting, do you think has star potential?
You know, I'm not sure they're going to be able to get the star if they stay at seven. I mean, I think they're going to get a very good player, but I think the star, you know, it's hard to say because it's a draft where somebody's going to drop from the top four and somebody's going to hit from outside the top four. You don't know who that is. Last year, obviously, the well documented example is Donovan Mitchell dropping to 13 and becoming a star. And you know, if you redraft Tatum. From three is probably one. Mitchell at 13 is probably two, and Markkanen at seven, maybe three. Their needs, I mean, John Paxson has said it point blank. You know, we need a D and three wing, and we need a versatile big man. So if you're looking at where they're at seven, it's well documented that, you know, Wendell Carter Jr. is going to probably be on the board at that point. Mikal Bridges, Miles Bridges, Michael Porter may flip to that. That's a real intriguing possibility. So somebody's fallen from Bamba, Trey Young, who I don't think will be a Bull, or Porter. So do they go safe, kind of more the conservative drafting profile that Gar and John have utilized in the past? And, you know, there's no sure thing, but a safe pick would be a Wendell Carter Jr. or Mikal Bridges. Or do they take a little bit of upside if Bamba or Porter drop to them? That is something that we're all going to be intrigued to follow come next Thursday.
Where are they on Zach LaVine?
Where are they?
Yeah, like what do they think he is, and what's he worth?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing: this is not a good summer to be a free agent. There's not a lot of teams with cap space, and the market is correcting itself after the funny money from 2 years ago. So, what's he worth? I mean, you know, if he thinks he's worth the max, the Bulls are going to, I'm guessing here, I'm not reporting this, the Bulls are going to make him go get one in an offer sheet, and then they would have to decide whether they're going to match it. My sense is they have a very good relationship with his representation. My sense is they'll be proactive in what they feel the fair market value. I'm just throwing out a number here as a guess. I have no idea. I've not reported this at all because that starts July 1st. 15, 16 million a year. Maybe 17 or 18 million a year. I mean, you traded Jimmy Butler for him, so you're going to have to probably overpay a little bit. But you also, if you listen to the comments that John has been saying publicly, we want to be patient with this rebuild process, and we don't want to hamstring ourselves with onerous long-term deals. That screams, you know, not paying the max to Zach LaVine to me. So, look, you're worth what you get. If he goes out and get a max offer sheet, God bless him, and the Bulls will have a tough decision on their hands. But you also, in my estimation, cannot trade Jimmy Butler and let the main cog of that return walk for nothing. That's franchise crippling from my seat.
What would you do if you were LeBron? What would be on your checklist of things?
Oh, man. You know, he's earned the right to do whatever he wants. He's made it clear the family's going to play a big part of it. That's what should happen at the stage of his career and also where the ages of his children. So what should he do? He should do whatever he wants to do. I never had a problem with him going to Miami. Say what you want about the TV show, okay? In retrospect, maybe a minor misstep in a career where he's been on the cover of Sports Illustrated since he's 16 years old and has gotten into no public trouble and raised a boatload of money for charity and done a ton of good for Akron.
Even that show raised a whole bunch of money for charity.
Exactly. So, yeah, it was a show a little self-promoting, yeah, what have you. But, yes, the show. So I never had a problem with him going to Miami. So he can do whatever he wants. Look, our job is to be objective in this business. I made it pretty clear in my writing and in my dealings with him just because he's always – to me, representing the league with class, been very professional. I'm a huge LeBron fan, always have been. I wrote a column defending his move going to Miami in 11. You know, obviously it was a great story when he came back to Cleveland and he delivered a title. So he can do whatever the hell he wants and whatever's best for his family. He's earned that right.
I do wonder though, like what will motivate him now and like what's the right fit and. I don't know if there's a good answer. Like, I don't know. I honestly don't know if there's a better answer than him staying in Cleveland.
Well, one thing you're starting to hear as a just a little league buzz of possibility, and it's not anything. It's just everyone speculating. But one thing you're starting to hear consistently is maybe he does another one-on-one short-term deal. He opts out. He gets a little bit more money on the 1 year. Has another player out, so he sits in a holding pattern for a year. And yeah, with him in the East. On whatever team, he has a chance to win the East. So, you know, he sits there for a year, figures out if they can get into a better cap situation, figures out if they can, you know, get anything trade-wise or guys, free agents coming on the cheap to Cleveland. But that's one thing you're starting to hear. But nobody knows what he's going to do. But in terms of his criteria, he's laid out pretty clearly. It's to compete for championships and to make his family happy. What percentage he places on those two camps, I have no idea.
Do you think the cap goes up if they get a taste of this gambling money that the cap could explode again?
No, because right now the TV contract is set. It is leveling off. I mean, it's jumping a little bit, but it's not jumping to the levels they thought. So that's what I mean. Like that, the problem with free agency now is you got agents and they're just doing their job, but you got agents going, well, look what this guy got in 2016. You know, those deals are gone. I mean, the Mozgov deals, the Dang and Noah deals, those deals are gone. You still have your max guys that are going to get every penny, and you got your minimum free agent guys. The middle class, for the most part, is drying up in the NBA, and that's why first-round picks are gold, because they're on a rookie-scale contract controlled for several years, and that's why, obviously, star power and max players are gold. So, yeah, I don't know about in answer to your question. I've heard nothing about that. I don't know anything about that yet. But this summer is going to be a pretty painful free agency for a lot of people.
Casey, I appreciate your time. Thanks for extending the interview a little bit. And the piece is incredible. Great work by you and everyone over at the Tribune. It was a fascinating read, and I'm glad that you were able to come on and talk about it.
I don't get to talk to you enough, Lawrence. You know I'm a big fan. Keep doing what you're doing. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Casey. That's Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune. The piece, I'm going to tweet it out, at Lawrence W. Holmes, by the way, if you want to check it out. It's one of those things where you know where it'd be perfect, and obviously that's where it dropped, but you know where it'd be perfect? On a Sunday morning, you're sitting there with your coffee, enjoying it, getting ready for the Bulls draft next week. You should really read it. It is so interesting. And big thanks to KC for jumping on the show. I want to ask you the same question about LeBron that I asked KC. We'll do that after a quick timeout. You're listening to The Score. Hope you enjoyed that last segment with KC. It was brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. Also, if you're looking for an attorney, you might need one. We got an idea for you. Here's what you need. If you need a reputable guy or girl, send questions that you want answered to WBBMNewsRadio.com/legal advice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com/legal advice. A lot of people texting in saying that they enjoyed the interview. It's, I mean, I tweeted to someone, look, Casey's one of those dudes, man. His information is so good. You can't have a bad interview with Casey. So I'm glad that he was available and that we were going to be able to talk to him. And we're getting ready for the draft. We got some good coverage coming up on this show. I know tomorrow we're going to talk with Cody Westerlin, who covers the Bulls for us here. And my friend Mark Schanowski said he would stop by and hang out in studio. So we're going to get you squared away and ready for the draft and whatnot over the next couple of days and couple of shows. Texas says, can we get a scoreboard update soon? We don't do those anymore at night. We do them in the morning, but we don't do them at night. So it's more of the show. So I guess that's good. And it's cool. All right? Sorry. So, why, if you need to know, White Sox are scoreless, right? Is that game in the second with Cleveland? There. That's your scoreboard update. And it's brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Wildcats host Michigan, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Illinois, and more this fall at Ryan Field. Season tickets are on sale now at NUSports.com. So let me throw the question that I threw at KC at you. And let me tell you how it came about. And I want to take some phone calls on it. I'm in the barbershop yesterday. Blues Barbershop on 53rd. By the way, they're being featured tonight. My man Rico, my actual barber, Rico, is being featured tonight on Channel 9. They're doing like a Father's Day type deal. So shout out to Rico and Nolan and Ellie and all the guys over at Blues. And Vanessa, too, who I'm pretty sure they based the Eve character in Barbershop on. I'm pretty sure that that's Vanessa, but whatever. Anyway, we were talking about LeBron. He is a big topic of conversation in the barbershop. Obviously, there are people who love LeBron. I consider myself one of those. There are people who hate LeBron. It's hard to deny that even if you don't think that he's anywhere close to Jordan, and I don't want to do that, you can't deny that he's the best player of this era. And you look at him and you go, so many choices. The fact that 15 years in, he was still able to do what he did this year, that he was able to do what he did in the playoffs, that he carried a bag of bums to the NBA Finals, again, with almost no help. And then they have that collapse in game one, the brain cramps that went on. And I know we spent a lot of time talking about J.R. Smith. We haven't spent enough time talking about George Hill. I'm sitting there, me and White Panther are watching the game. And as he's dribbling, he steps away from the line to take the second free throw. She goes, that child is terrified. And I knew, like, well, if she was able to sense the fear, something bad was going to happen. And then two bad things happened. So LeBron loses to the Warriors, who are just a cheat code waiting to happen. Things aren't going right. Just wait. Steph's about to get loose. Things aren't going right. Just wait. Kevin Durant will take over the game. Things aren't going right. Just wait. Klay Thompson will turn the lights out for you. They were getting real minutes from JaVale McGee. Did you enjoy watching your $3.5 million get himself a ring? Go ahead, Herbie. I know you want to say something.
Nah, he was all good in that parade.
He was on that hen.
Ran out of Henny, and the fans gave him some more.
I'm actually really impressed that there was someone at the Warriors parade just with a bottle of Hennessy. You would think it was Shannon Sharp. The fact that there was someone on the parade route, I think it was Laura Britt, who just had a bottle of Hennessy available for Jordan Bell was hysterical. But here's LeBron. I'm sure that he looks at this and goes, what am I supposed to do? Like, what's the right next thing to do? Is the right next thing to do put pressure on the Cavaliers to, we got to figure out, we got to do a better job of scouting. We have to figure out what the right pieces are. And I think the right pieces are more consistent three-point shooting for when the defenses obviously collapse on LeBron. But Kyle Korver is one of the greatest three-point shooters of all time. The problem is that a lot of these defenses are able to recover faster than even a guy like Korver can get a shot off. And if he goes in the tank, you're dead. If Kyle Korver has a bad shooting night, you got no chance. Kevin Love is still a good player, and I thought he played hard in the NBA Finals. But LeBron and that crew, I don't know if you're not just going to find yourself back in the same position again. And if you're him, what do you do? I don't think it's a matter of he owes Cleveland anything. I'm just trying to figure out what, if you're him, what is the best option for you? Is it staying in Cleveland, knowing that even with this bag of bums, you can win the East? Philadelphia is still not quite ready. And as long as Ben Simmons can't shoot, I think they got problems. Toronto will crumble at the sight of LeBron walking into their building. Milwaukee's not ready yet. Washington is, the two guys that are great players don't seem to like each other. By the way, if there were no salary cap issues, that would be the place I would tell LeBron to go. D.C. I think him and John Wall and Bradley Beal would be amazing. I think LeBron with this group of Bulls would win the East. There really aren't many teams where you drop LeBron into the East and you couldn't win. I think Detroit, yeah, I know people think Detroit is close. Detroit, Charlotte, Brooklyn, and the Knicks are the four teams in the East where he wouldn't win. But other than that, bring them on to the Bulls. Let's go. But what would you do? What would you do? And I know people keep talking about Los Angeles. Oh, well, he can live that Hollywood lifestyle. He's LeBron James. He can live a Hollywood lifestyle wherever he is. There's nothing that he can't do in Los Angeles that he's already doing. You're like, well, what about Hollywood? Do you know how many things LeBron is executive producing for Netflix? Like, he was the executive producer of that Vince Carter documentary on Netflix. And he may have produced the AI one. I can't remember. He's in movies with Amy Schumer, all while being in Cleveland.
Yeah, and it's going to cost him a lot more money if he moves to L.A.
Them taxes. You know where he can make a lot of money? Houston. If that matters. I don't know if it matters at this point. Also, Miami could go back there. I think that might be a move. It doesn't look as bad. Like, if for the people that are going to obviously be mad no matter what, it doesn't look as bad. Well, I won two championships in Miami. I'm going to go back there. So what would you do if you were LeBron? Where would you go? What options does he have? 312-644-6767 is the number. My name is Lawrence Holmes. We're talking about it here on The Score. talking a little bit about the NBA and LeBron James. And what would you do if you were LeBron? The bottom of the hour, which was a little while ago. It's brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. Make this year the last year you get fed up trying to book your timeshare. If it no longer fits your lifestyle, go to timeshareexitteam.com and discover your options for a safe, permanent exit. This is so needed. Timeshareexitteam.com. What would you do? What would be important? Frodog is out in DeKalb. Hey, Frodog, you're on the score.
Hey, Lawrence, how's it going, man?
Things are good. What's on your mind?
Well, kind of talking about LeBron and what happened in the finals and all that. First of all, he has options. He can go to Philadelphia, I believe. Houston, it'd be kind of tough with the salary cap situation, but that's definitely an option. L.A., I don't think so. I don't think anybody wants to deal with Lonzo Ball and his dad, but that's just my opinion. But, you know, as far as if he stays in Cleveland, the problems are this. Like, he needs some low-post help. Like, I don't know, Tristan Thompson's bad at basketball. Like, he may be good at other things, but I don't think he's good at basketball. And Korver, in January, he's great, but when the playoffs roll around, he turns the crap. So I don't think he's going to need a lot of help if he stays in Cleveland.
I agree, which is like he's not stuck. He's LeBron James. But clearly some things need to change. Bad. Mike, how many producer credits did we find for LeBron James for all the people that think that he needs to go to Los Angeles to make some of this stuff happen?
He currently on IMDb, which is like the place to go to find this stuff, 15 producer credits. And that's not all that he's also acted, written, et cetera, but just 15 producer credits.
Isn't he producer of that show, The Wall, that game show, The Wall? Isn't that LeBron's thing?
Yes, he does that. He also does the Do or Dare with celebrities, athletes, musicians, et cetera. Becoming Bobby Freno, Best Shot. He's doing a Muhammad Ali Space Jam 2. It is announced. It's not official yet there. Warriors of Liberty City is another documentary. He's got all sorts of credits on there.
So he doesn't need to, like, well, he's obviously going to Los Angeles because of that. He doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to do that at all. It's crazy. And I agree. First of all, Lonzo can't shoot. Let's start there. Then I got to deal with the craziness. Although I'll give Lonzo credit. In those commercials for Equalizer 2, he's kind of funny. I give him credit for that. Let's go out to Brighton Park and talk with John. Hey, John, you're on the score.
Hey, what's up, Lawrence? How you doing?
I'm doing really well, John. What's on your mind?
Good. Listen, I don't see what's the big idea of bringing LeBron over here to Chicago. Because,
wait,
why
are you
not?
Are you telling me that you do not want LeBron James on the Bulls?
No, I do.
Okay,
I do. We got young up and coming talent coming in, and this guy could be a father for them, a mentor, and I mean this guy is the Michael Jordan of this era. I'm not comparing him to Jordan.
Yes, you did.
Sure.
You just did.
No. How?
John, you just said he's the Michael Jordan of this era. I'm not mad at you. I'm just saying that you did compare
but
him.
Lawrence, what I mean is I wouldn't compare those two in the same era. What I'm saying is those two are in different eras. I mean, what I'm saying is why not bring them over? Why not? Pay him the money for a couple years.
It's not even that. I appreciate the call, John. It's not even that, man. I'm joking. I mean, I'm not kidding that I do think that they would win the East with LeBron on it. I think Markkanen's a really good player. I think it would take a ton of pressure off of Zach LaVine. And I think that he could get back to doing what he was doing when he was out in Minnesota. And I think Chris Dunn got some dog in him. And I like the way he plays. You drop him in there, you're going to win the East. But I think that his sights are, I want to win a championship. And where can I do that at? Do you go to Houston? Here, you know what I've been wondering? Can LeBron James convince anyone to come to Cleveland? Can he convince Paul George to go to Cleveland? Can he convince Chris Paul to come play with him in Cleveland?
Paul George's already been to one boring Midwest city. He's good.
He's kind of boring, though.
Yeah, but he's from California, so he wants to go back there and languish in mediocrity.
Can I throw a there are two that I think that are long shots, and I gave you one earlier with Washington. Can I give you another one? Oklahoma City.
Is that like minus Carmelo?
It was minus Paul George.
But so Carmelo's still there?
He has to be.
Yeah.
You know what? This is another thing that we talked about in the parking lot. Carmelo has like a mid-80s game. And now he can't get that first step to get to the mid-range jumper. Carmelo needs to spend the summer becoming a stand and shoot three-point guy. Or he needs to go to the post and dominate as a four. Because he's the way that he can't hoodie mellow, like that's not happening anymore. But LeBron and Russ, let's go! Let's go! But everyone thinks Russ is crazy pants, so they don't want to go play with him. Shoot, that's still my dude. I don't care. I pay money to go see Russell Westbrook. Real talk. Russ came to town last year. I was like, I'm going to see Russ. And I was not disappointed. Russ was making fun of people behind the bench. It was great. Someone said something sideways. He looked and I was like, oh, no. Oh, man, that would be fun. Alex is in Detroit. Hey, Alex, you're on the score.
Hey, Lawrence, how are you? You had me laughing about the Carmelo mid-80s comment, by the way.
Isn't that that's his game, though, Alex. It's like he's got that mid. It's been the same since he was at Syracuse. He's a mid-range guy with a great score that used to have a great first step. And now he just does not. Not everyone from that draft class can have the body and work ethic of LeBron James.
Yeah, one more thing before I get to my point. Speaking of Carmelo, I think you should post him up in the three because he's bigger than a lot of threes, and he'd be really good in the post.
That's what I'm saying, have him be a four, because I don't think he can guard wings, man. And I just don't think that offensively he's not good in space anymore. You know what
no,
I mean?
I agree with you. Back to my original point in my call about LeBron. I have a comment on where I think he will go and where he should go.
Okay.
I think he will end up going to L.A. And it's not really about Hollywood. It's maybe a dream of his to go play in California and to play on the West Coast, kind of in the shadows of Kobe. I think there's the whole concept of, hey, Kobe was the guy when I came in the league, and I want to follow in his footsteps. But I think he should go to Philly because he can really win the championship there with Simmons and Embiid and company. And the future of that team is ridiculous.
Here's my all right, a couple things. My issue with Philly is LeBron's a ball-dominant guy, right? What are you doing with Ben Simmons? Because he can't shoot. What will he be doing for you if LeBron James comes there? How's that going to work? The thing with L.A., the reason why I don't see LeBron in Los Angeles is it's going to take too long. And I feel like you're putting yourself in a position to be knocked out in the second round of the playoffs for sure by either Houston or Golden State, and possibly in the first round of the playoffs by San Antonio in a 4-5 game. That's why I don't know. It depends on who goes with him. I appreciate you calling in. We'll switch back to baseball, talk some Cubs. Joe Ostrowski is going to join me for his weekly visit. One of the hosts of Hit and Run. Going to talk some Cubs with you next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.